Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the first day of February 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Take a look at the cash grain segment with the folks out at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and discuss the weather forecast with the guys at Brisk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Speaking of the weather, along the way, we'll hear from Mike Tenorum. He's with us on Thursday afternoons, but was speaking on campus as a guest lecturer in an Ag Econ class, and I caught up with him to talk a little bit about how T-Storm was created and his current forecast for drier weather may be this summer in the Corn Belt. So we'll do that as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, the numbers finished a bit lower. Futures for the March contract in the corn pit down three quarters at $3.71 and a quarter. May a penny lower at $3.75 and three quarters. And July at $3.80 and a half, down one. December corn at $3.92, down a penny and a quarter. March beans for the day, $8.80 and three quarters, a penny and a half lower. The May contract down two and a quarter. It settled at $8.82 and a quarter. July at $8.87 and three quarters, two and a quarter lower. In the August, $8.89 and a quarter, two and a half lower. November beans at $8.90 and a quarter for the new crop. And they were down two and three quarters for the afternoon on this Monday. Soybean meal futures at $2.71, down $1.40. And the bean oil for the day at $30.76, down 12 cents. Soft red winter wheat, March contract four lower at $4.75 and a quarter. The May down four and a half at $4.80 and a half. And the hard red, May contract $4.76 and three quarters, down 5.5 cents. The live cattle futures finished the February up 17 and a half at $135.47 and a half. The April at $134.20, up 20 cents. March feeders at $157.80, up 55. And April at $156.85, 17 and a half higher. Lean hogs currently trading 70 cents lower at $65 and a dime. April futures at $70.52 and a half, 17 and a half cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Just about a month from now, month and 8 days, in fact, on the 8th day of March. The All-Day Ag Outlook is coming up. Tickets will go on sale on Wednesday of this week. I'll let you know where and how and when we get there.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Here's what the outside markets are looking like at this hour. Nearby crude oil at $31.58 is now down $2 and a nickel. Ethanol futures at $1.41 and 8 tenths of a cent, 8 tenths of a cent lower per gallon. And the wholesale price of gasoline at $1.08 and a half. That's down 4 7 tenths of a cent. Diesel fuel at $1.03 and 6 tenths, actually traded as heating oil, down 4 2 tenths of a cent. Natural gas for the day at $2.15 and a half, 14 3 tenths of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 14 points higher at 16,368. The U.S. dollar down 0.622 at 99.03. And on the day, the gold futures at $1,128.75 or $12.25 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We'll see mostly sunny skies, a high near 46 degrees. Winds will be calm today out of the east-northeast. And then tonight, a 20% chance of rainfall after 4 a.m. So mostly tomorrow morning, mostly cloudy, a low of 35 overnight. East winds at 5 to 10, increasing to 12 to 17 in our area. Winds could gust as high as 26. And then tomorrow, showers are likely in the Urbana-Champaign area. Occasional showers and possibly a thunderstorm afternoon. A high of 53 tomorrow, breezy with an east wind at 15 to 23. That'll turn to the south-southwest in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 34. Chance of precipitation is set at 90%. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the guys at Risk Pulse there in Chicago.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this very first day of February 2016. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at the trade in Chicago and what we could see for the rest of this month. Hi, Kurt. How are you today?
Doing good. Thank you, Todd.
Well, get yourself all hunkered down. Fortunately, I think we're far enough south that we won't have to worry too much about snow, but the guys further to the north and certainly to the west are definitely going to have to worry about this winter storm. And I guess from what I've heard, the folks that are to the south of us, and south of Illinois even, probably will have to worry about some dangerous weather related to the same system. However, with all of that volatility, the one volatility we're not seeing is in the marketplace in Chicago, at least on this day. Kind of a yawner there for the trade today.
Yeah, it's somewhat steady. We saw some early selling on concerns of outside market activity, world economics, and we kind of settled down from there and kind of so-called divorced ourselves from there. Wheat was kind of a surprising thing here. Saw Egypt cancel some French wheat due to quality concerns, and European wheat futures traded lower. Our wheat futures traded lower, and all of a sudden confirmed through the day. Then this afternoon, talking about Egypt back in the wheat market, so we'll see what develops there. But, you know, weather's going to start being the main focus here. We start to move into the spring. We'll see whether El Nino turns to La Nina or not. And that's kind of going to be the main news from there. Two housekeeping things here from this morning's commentary. You got some very sharp listeners, listened very closely. On the corn rally through here, talked about short covering. The funds whittling away their short position down to almost down to 76,000 contracts versus over 280,000 contracts. I've been corrected. And remind, this is election year. This is more likely Donald Trump in the marketplace securing the Iowa vote. So we'll see if that works this evening tonight. Then secondly, too, on the cattle inventory report, yes, it did show herd expansion and some growth there, but we were looking for a little bit more than what the market was looking for, and there is definitely some expansion in the cattle inventory numbers there. So just those two points of interest that some listeners pointed out to me.
We have some sharp-eared listeners. Glad to have them around. Hopefully they'll be listening and correcting us along the way. I don't mind it if they correct me or you, either one. That keeps us honest all the way through the process, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, it's going to be interesting through here. We're in this together, sharing information and trying to get the minds rolling here on coming up some good trading and marketing decision. That's kind of the thing here. I am quite excited about Groundhog Day. I think last year the old groundhog bit a couple guys on Groundhog Day, so we'll see if that happens again this year.
Well, we'll have two things to talk about tomorrow, the caucuses in Iowa and Groundhog Day. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being
with
me. You too. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Let's delve into a little different space at this point this afternoon. Each and every Thursday, you hear Mike Tenura on our air. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He's an alum of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. He is, in fact, a trained ag economist as well as a meteorologist. He was here this morning to guest lecture to a class in one of the college of ACES, and I ran into him and had him drop down to my studio to talk a little bit with him about his business, T-Storm, and how he arrived there. I thought you might find it of interest.
Well, it's fairly straightforward in that I started out with a meteorology background, went to Iowa State University. Then once I had obtained that degree, ended up working in television. So I was at a TV station in Hastings, Nebraska, KHAS, and from there went to WCIA here in Champaign. But after working in TV for about 7 years, I kind of came to the conclusion that I really wanted to live in Chicago, and I wanted to have a little more control over where I would live. And being in broadcasting, you kind of have to follow the job if you really want to move along. And I was up for a potential job in Lexington, Kentucky. And even though I was excited about it, I kind of realized that I really didn't want to live in Lexington, Kentucky, because there really was nothing for me there, as far as I didn't know anybody. My family wasn't there. I like weather. Their weather patterns are fairly benign compared to what you have from Illinois and points to the west. So that was kind of the beginning of rethinking my career, and ended up meeting with Scott Irwin at the University of Illinois in the Agricultural Economics Department. And from there, went for a master's degree, and the rest was kind of history. At that point, ended up figuring out that I could start a weather service for commodity traders, which happened in the middle of schooling. It wasn't afterwards. It was actually while I was doing the master's degree, came up with the idea for T-Storm Weather.
What was your thesis?
It was looking at the relationship between weather and technology and corn and soybean yields across the United States over a period of time starting in 1960.
And is that thesis the basis of T-Storm?
Well, it isn't the basis, but it certainly has been very helpful, because a lot of the things that were discussed and worked on for that thesis, which, you know, took over 3 years, so it was a fairly extensive study, but a lot of the same principles of the way to look at crop development and the way to look at weather and the way to look at yields, the initial ideas kind of came from doing that whole thesis. So then now when things come up from a weather standpoint that are interesting, and you want to know, okay, how does this weather event compare to yields of the past? You know, does this weather event give an idea of what may or may not happen in the future? You know, it was kind of the, that just kind of gave a nice starting point for it. So a lot of the things that I do are related to what was worked on in the thesis, and then just applying the same types of ideas and methodologies to weather forecasting, and really more so analyzing weather and what it may or may not mean for future crops.
You've told me in the past about the turning point in your business, which involved you making a forecast for rainfall in a dry period here in the Midwest that was opposite of what everybody else had been looking forward to, and that you were able to take what was coming out of the U.S. models and understand that the difference you saw was a flaw in the computer model, and that you had enough background to understand that. How important is that kind of analytical side of the market to what T-Storm does today? And then can you put that all into perspective of the current opposite of trend, I guess, thought you have about this summer's weather? Because there are some that are with you that this might be a drought year in the United States. However, you have been forecasting, maybe with more confidence, that it has greater possibility.
Well, I remain confident that the probability is considerably higher than normal for a poor corn or soybean crop, but I wouldn't say that it's a definite possibility, because it's not. The statistics don't show you that it's imminent, but there are a lot of statistics out there that show you the probability is higher than normal. If you just look at U.S. corn or soybean yields over the last 56 years, starting in 1960, which is a good starting point, because that was the year that we moved up on a new trend yield, which is where yields go up over time, and they've pretty much gone up in a straight line, unabated, since 1960 for both corn and soybeans in the U.S. So if you just look at that data alone, you would come to the conclusion that approximately 1 in 8 years has a really poor corn or soybean crop that would be at least 6% below the trend. So that's the unconditional probability of being below trend, or far below trend, I should say. So 1 in 8 years, or 14% of years, have a really bad crop. But if you look at the years in which you start with an El Nino in January and you reach either neutral or La Nina conditions by the summer, and what that means is that the Pacific Ocean has cooled fairly rapidly, whether real rapidly or slowly, it doesn't really matter the exact rate. It just matters that you end up in neutral or La Nina conditions by the summer. Of the 10 times that that's happened since 1960, well, three of the crops that accompanied that were very poor. They were among those worst crop years. So the probability based on this dying El Nino is for a very poor crop. The probability is around 30% for corn and soybeans. The bad years for corn were 83, 88 in 2003. And for soybeans, they were 83, 88 in 2003. Excuse me, the bad corn years were 83, 88, and 95. So right there, we know the probability is higher, even without knowing anything else. That would be kind of the point to take away. That still means that there were 7 out of 10 crops that were near trend or maybe even above trend. But these poor crops tend to show up more often when you have this type of ocean situation.
Are there other items that we need to consider as it relates to this forecast?
Well, I think there's probably one other thing to consider, and this will be the real interesting one to see if this actually verifies. But we were in a very unusual period back in November and December. November, December of this year across the Corn Belt was the number one wettest since before 1895. Because November was unseasonably wet, the fourth wettest since 1895, immediately followed by the wettest December since before 1895. So that's a 2-month period of very unusual rainfall. Some might say that that's just doesn't really mean much, but we would argue that that's 1/6 of the year that had a similar weather pattern, which is a long-running weather pattern. Now, with that aside, if we take a look at crops, U.S. corn and soybean crops, following the wettest November-Decembers on record, and we kind of have to start in 1960, because if we go before 1960, we can't fairly compare U.S. corn and soybean yields to what will happen in 2016. So if we isolate out the 20% of the wettest periods in November-December that preceded those yields, the fascinating thing is that we end up seeing that many of those really poor crops followed that situation. Actually, 55% of our worst crops happened after that, which again, the normal probability is 8 or 14%, 1 in 8. We're seeing that 6 out of 11 situations that had a real wet November were followed by those worst crops on records. And of those crops, there's only 2 that also had a dying El Nino. One was in 1983, the other was in 1988. Both of those years started differently, with 1983 having been unseasonably cool and wet in the spring, ultimately followed by significant drought and major heat in July and August. 88 was a little different in that it started out dry in the winter, and then it just progressively turned drier all the way through June, and it turned very hot in June and July because of a lack of soil moisture. But, you know, whether or not that's connected or not remains debatable. We would just argue that even though some people might say that just because you have a correlation doesn't mean that you can explain it with cause. For example, you can't look at who won the Super Bowl and compare that to crop yields. That wouldn't make any sense. Some people might say that about this rainfall anomaly. But we would argue that if you look at a wet pattern for 1/6 of the year, and then you see a whole bunch of bad crops lining up right after that, that essentially the atmosphere is giving you a clue that something is out of whack now. It's been long running, and it tends to remain out of whack through the spring and the following summer for an unclear reason. This could be figured out more than likely with a what we call a synoptic climatology, which is where meteorologists would look at all the weather patterns and try and figure out what triggered this to recur in the spring and summer. But, you know, that could be a thesis in itself. You have to really spend a lot of time researching it. We just looked at the data, we're pointing it out, and again, that points to a higher than normal risk. But again, it wasn't like every single time this happened we had a bad crop. But in that case, more than half the time, you combine that with the El Nino, I mean, this is a situation that probably hasn't existed too many times in the past. and will have to be closely watched as we move into the growing season. And at what point it will become obvious is hard to say. But if it does become obvious, you know, it'll probably give some hints between now and then. It won't just happen one day and just start. There'll be some clues that's happening going forward.
And that, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us this afternoon on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear him regularly on the Closing Market Report during our weather segment on Thursday afternoon. Speaking of the weather, a bit later we'll talk about this snowstorm that's coming up with the guys at Brisk Pulse. They're out of Chicago as well. But if you want to go check out Eric Snodgrass's YouTube video on the path that this will take and what his considerations might be, that's been posted to our website already. He's another one of the meteorologists that joins us on our program. And I think we have the best weather staff. They are all volunteers, of course, for agriculture anywhere on the planet. And those are three of them. So check out Eric Snodgrass's look at this snowstorm that will be followed, he says, next week by a really cold Arctic blast. That's a YouTube video up on the willag.org website. He's from Agrible right here in town and also teaches at the University of Illinois in atmospheric sciences. Another little interesting story there on our website at willag.org is about the tillage practices that farmers employ across the United States, and USDA ERS looking at how many farmers actually use no-till and or strip-till and how widely that is deployed across corn, soybeans, wheat, and cotton acres in the U.S., so you might want to visit there as well. Now, let's talk about the cash grain market. Brian Stark is here. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been a quiet day except for all of the weather that we're having to worry about later in the week. Quiet there at the Andersons as well?
Yeah, I would say for the most part, with the warm-up and weather, we've kind of seen movement slow down as lots have gotten a little softer and guys waiting for the Arctic blast potentially to freeze up the ground and let them haul again here next week.
Well, so there's a good news, as that cold Arctic blast will freeze things up. Should they move grain next week? I know they'll have to deliver some, but should they make fresh sales at all?
I think at the present time, they're kind of in a wait-and-hold pattern. It's been that way since we turned the calendar year. You know, the calendar tends to dictate sales versus a strict price right now, as once they get their cash flow needs met, they just kind of sit on their hands and hope for the market to bounce back.
How hopeful is this at this point?
Well, I think today I would classify it as a pretty positive response. I mean, we had a risk-on feel from the Bank of Japan's move, negative rate scheme at the end of last week. Saw a bunch of fund covering, and then over the weekend, the CFTC report on Friday showed the funds were less short than expected. You also had economic data out of China that was disappointing for a six-month in a row with their PMI down. A lot of negativity in the macro market, and for the market to kind of surge back towards that 372 technical area, trying to stabilize and trade above it, I think is pretty impressive. So, you know, the market's still range bound for the most part, but I think that the farmers should feel good about the way we close today.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That is Brian Stark from the Andersons.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Baked Alaska Day. It's also Feast of St. Bridget of Ireland, patron of cattle, chicken farmers, and dairy maids. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, Botanical Magazine was first published in London, edited by William Curtis. In 1913, Grand Central Terminal in New York City opened. It was the largest railroad station in the world, with 44 platforms and 67 tracks on two levels. In 1939, state assemblymen in Maine introduced a bill in the legislature to make it illegal to use tomatoes in New England clam chowder. According to some sources, the addition of tomatoes in place of milk was initially the work of Portuguese immigrants in Rhode Island, as tomato-based stews were already a traditional part of Portuguese cuisine. Scornful New Englanders called this modified version Manhattan-style clam chowder because, in their view, calling someone a New Yorker was an insult. In 1953, James Lewis Kraft died, the founder of Kraft Company. He patented, in 1916, pasteurized processed cheese, a low-cost cheese that would not spoil. While not overly popular with the public, the U.S. Army purchased over 6 million tins of it during World War I. And during the Depression, it became popular because of its low cost. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, and at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information at countrycrop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here from Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago. Thanks, Mark, for being with us. Let's start, Mark, with this big storm that's coming out of the Rockies and making its way across the Plain States and bullseyes, I guess, is on parts of Missouri and Iowa and into Minnesota, Wisconsin. How much snowfall can we expect for them?
Well, it looks like the main swath with our upcoming Plains and Northwest Midwest blizzard, the main swath of snow will extend from eastern Colorado towards the northeast, including northwestern Kansas, much of southern Nebraska, into Iowa, Minnesota, and much of central and northern Wisconsin. Within that core, it looks like the highest snow totals will be 8 to 14 inches, with even some isolated heavier amounts, with really the northern Kansas, southern Nebraska border really being the epicenter here. So thinking like cities like Grand Island, Omaha, Kearney, Nebraska, they look to be right in the middle of it. And with the strong winds expected here, 35 to 45 mile per hour, gusts over 50, it's going to create blizzard conditions here for about a 24 to 36 hour period.
Starting now or sometime later?
No, the snow is starting to break out right now across that region. It's going to pick up even more intensity here during the overnight hours, and tomorrow is the main day across the central plains, and then that works its way into Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin as we go into tomorrow night into Wednesday morning.
And oftentimes these strong storms have a whole bunch of other things that happen with them depending on how warm or cold it is. So there, it appears it'll be warmer here and to the south. What kind of conditions will prevail in those areas?
Yeah, well, here across Illinois, we're going to see basically rain with this system. I guess at the end, on the kind of the backlash of the system, there might be a few flakes of snow across northern Illinois, but for all practical purposes, this is rain for the state. And yeah, we still have milder temperatures here the next couple of days before that front works its way through. But you could even see some severe weather development across areas of southern Illinois, southern Indiana, coming up into later on tomorrow night and early Wednesday as a cold front approaches.
And just a minute left, take me to the southern hemisphere and give me crop conditions there.
Sure. Well, down across South America, overall, we continue to be in pretty good shape with no major weather issues evolving. Over the past few weeks, we've developed this dry pocket in areas of Argentina, eastern Argentina and Uruguay, southern Brazil. Rio Grande do Sul has been involved with that as well. That's in the process of changing right now and improving as we're seeing a much more active pattern develop across Argentina and southern Brazil. The most active conditions and above normal rainfall will be across southern Brazil into Paraguay, but Argentina and Uruguay will see generally near normal totals and thus good opportunities for rain over the next couple of weeks. So some of the dryness concerns that have crept up recently because of that dry pocket, those should be subsiding as a result of these upcoming rains.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
And that, of course, Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report.